Succession number 23139, Reel 2.
Bob Sollers, Reel 2.
Okay. Oh, do you want me to say
please.
That? Now?
Yes, carry on.
Bob Sollers, Reel 2. Now, to continue about the air raid on Portsmouth, this was the first air raid that Portsmouth had received. It was a massive do, of course. And there we were on the beach. We went out of the mess and onto the beach, and we were watching this bombing going on. We watched the aircraft come over, and steadily these water spouts came closer and closer towards Portsmouth, and then of course Portsmouth really got a hard going over, and leaving nothing but just one complete black smoke. That's my memory of it. And that's the first daylight raid Portsmouth had. Now, being 4 o'clock-ish in the afternoon, we'd more or less finished our daily duties, apart from night guards on certain parts of the island, guard duty. One of our corporals, Corporal Barrett, he was married, a regular, married to a girl, and she was billeted over in Portsmouth Side. And Bill Barrett used to go up through to the ferry, across the ferry, and quite often she would come to the ferry and meet him, and they'd go home. Well, of course, with this air raid going on, Bill Barrett got in a bit of a panic, of course, rushed over, and of course she had a baby as well with her, and they didn't get hurt, thank goodness, but it was a hairy time for him. It was during after this period that we were directed. I think I've gone back a bit, haven't I?
It doesn't make any difference.
Doesn't it make any difference? No. Because after this, of course, I was more or less saying my experience of, you know, with the air raids and the Battle of Britain, one thing or another. What with that, and after the raids, I went to Dover, and then back from Dover, we went down to Limestone for this 6 weeks infantry course. Well, that was probably tougher than the first initial training when we first joined up in February. It was a really hard 6 weeks. There, it was a rather a large school, and we were, I think there were about 6 classes going at the same time, and we were taught, or we were in charge of each section was a sergeant, an old regular Marine sergeant, and characters came out, I'll tell you, with some of them. I can't remember his name, but our sergeant, we had all sorts of, we had classrooms, we had technical training inside the classroom, experience by going out onto the countryside. Woodbury Common was their training grounds. Using the modern, or not so modern, tactical ways of fighting a battle. So that gives you the picture of what we had to go through, and it was six hard weeks, really hard weeks. From there, we had to go through and pass out, and then back to Hayling Island, of which then was we're coming back up into November, or even late November, I think it was. And from there, as we hadn't had any leave, apart from the week we had in March, April, other boys who had been just working normally in their sections had had leave, whereas Stad, Munns and myself were unlucky. We went to the 6 weeks course and we didn't get any leave. So we got back to Haley Island late one evening, saw the sergeant major, and we mentioned about leave, and he said, well, you'll have to see the CO. He said, on Monday, because it was a weekend. And we thought, my God, we're going to lose 2 days. As that happened, as we were talking, the CO came in. And he said to us, he congratulated us on the result, because he'd had some sort of result through. We'd passed out. Started thinking in those days anybody would pass out. And we mentioned about leave. He said, yes, go and see the sergeant major and go immediately, which we did. After leave, came back to Haley Island, and then during that period of time, all sections were coming back into Haley Island to form the one large company again, prior to, which we didn't know at that time, prior to getting together, getting organised, and we had Christmas leave for a bit, and then back in January. And during January, we still had training to do, laying lines and testing lines, maintaining lines, telephone lines I'm talking about, for all parts, different to the Army and other places. And this took us into the end of January, when we were getting prepared to go abroad. We didn't know where. And it wasn't until about February, early February, that we were all prepared. We'd been over to Fort Cumberland, which was a MNBDO depot, and kitted out tropical gear and all this, that and the other. So we knew we were going abroad. And then early February, we were told to get on a train, the whole company, and went up to Scotland. Or travel all through the night. And from there, we boarded straight. No, we didn't board straight away. We, our company was, I can't remember the barracks. No, that's gone now. We went to a barracks in Glasgow somewhere. And York Hill Barracks in Glasgow, of which we had evening out somewhere, and then next morning we boarded transport at Glasgow Docks, of which was called a Norwegian boat called Bergensfjord, and we boarded the Bergensfjord there, and on February the 8th, I think it was, with the whole ship filled, with other ships also filled, we made our way up river to, what's the name of that place?
Greenock?
Greenock. We went to Greenock. And there, all boats were preparing for sea, and eventually we set sail. And at the time, it was the largest convoy by the time we'd all met, north of Ireland. It was probably the largest convoy that ever left England at the time. Boats from Liverpool also joined from our boats, which sailed from Greenock. And I always remember the amount of cruisers, about 20 odd cruisers, half a dozen cruisers, the lighter ones, the destroyers, and about half a dozen cruisers, Sunderlands and aircraft. Kept watch for about, well, quite a few days. I can't tell you exactly how many, when the convoy just went. Well, the first experience on a convoy onto the North Sea was, because we took a north route round and nearly into New, how far north I don't know, but it was very cold, ice on the boats, decks and goodness knows what, very cold, very rough weather, seasickness was rife, I was bad for 4 days. And the boats, the convoy, just went on out, up and round, almost to Newfoundland, so we were told. And then further going south, without any problems with submarines. And eventually, after, I can't remember the exact date, sometime in April, February, end of February, March. No, it wasn't March, because we, March, still in February, I suspect, in the end. We went into Freetown, and we went into the Freetown Harbour, which was, we were there for 6 days, thinking that we were going to get some shore leave, but no, we had no shore leave. We were stuck on that boat the whole time. And then after that, we returned out to the Atlantic and took a southern route over the equator. We had a ceremony on to South Africa, which we pulled into Cape Town. Into Cape Town, where we were told that we were not particularly welcome to go ashore, for the simple reason that the Australians coming from Australia had gone into Cape Town, and they were a rather crazy lot, and they caused a lot of mayhem with in cafes and goodness knows what, getting drunk and one thing and another. So we were allowed to stay for 24 hours, enough to take on food and water. And then after that, we were directed to go round into the Indian Ocean up to towards Durban. And we went into Durban, and we were allowed in there. And we were there for 6 days. And being Marines, we did what we were told. And we were warned that we had to make things good where the Australians had got a bad name and gave the British Army a bad name. However, we had a pleasant 6 days there, and after that we went up towards north, up to Port Tewfik. Well, we went into Aden first, and then over to Tewfik, of which then some of the lads had changed boats from Durban, and they went on up through the canal, but we were taken off at Port Tewfik because the boat was required to take Italian prisoners captured in the first North African campaign to their destination, which was, I think, a lot went over to Australia and places like that. So we had to go down over the side on nets, carrying all our equipment onto lighters, and then ferried on the lighter over to the land, where we got onto trains, which was not carriages, they were cattle, like trucks. And off we went from there, from Tewfik by rail, passing at times railway trains with carriages full up with Italian POWs. And they were so terribly carried at the time because they, if we stopped, which we did many times together, we going up, they're coming down. And we learned that they were worried because if we were Australians, apparently the Australians were pretty cruel to the Haitais at that time, you know, up in the North African campaign there. But once they knew that we were from England, they calmed down a bit. However, we went on up then to a station called El Quasasin. And from there, lorries took us over to a camp in the, well, we call it the desert, it was all sand, to Tahag. And that's where we were encamped for a period of time. Our first taste of North Africa. We didn't really have any chance of going into any of the Egyptian towns or anywhere for sightseeing or anything like that. I think one or two of the lads were a bit fortunate. But from there, we went with lorries again up into
Alexandria?
No. Oh, God.
Well, might come back to you later.
Well, where we sailed from. Port Said. And from Port Said, we were put onto an old boat called the City of Canterbury. And the MNBDO were all on there because we weren't the full. We were only about a section of the full MNBDO. I can remember because I glanced through my books the other day. There were about 2,000 odd of the MNBDO on the City of Canterbury. And with that boat, we learned that we were on the boat when we learned that Greece had fallen completely. And there we were going to Greece. Well, Greece meaning Crete. It did come out that that's where we were going then. Up to that point, we didn't know where we were going. And so, on the way, when we were closing in towards Crete, we were attacked by Italian torpedo carrying an aircraft. One got damaged, but there was no serious injuries to anybody. I think it was the Storrs boat was one which got hit, and it was beached, which was not good news as far as we were concerned. We then entered Suda Bay and into the quayside, and of course at this time the Germans had been busy coming over dropping bombs and goodness knows what, and of course we were told to get our stuff and get out as quickly as we could, marched out, and we went into towards Hanya into olive groves, which gave protection from aircraft by not seeing us. That was all. And we stayed there for, well, again, I don't know how long, until we were then split into different parts of the area around Hanya, Suda Bay and Hanya. We, being the headquarter company, we were stationed inside Hanya, and the actual part was by the old, because it's Hanya. Hanya was used to be called the capital of Crete, and we were stationed right opposite the government buildings. And there we started immediately, as soon as we managed to get some stores, was to lay lines to set different parts of the area around Arid District, and we organised and was installing a an exchange to work with the army, so that we can take lines to different parts, so that we can connect up with the army. Did you follow me?
Yes.
And then, of course, this was went pretty well. I was on a section which I had to put up. I think that was four pair that I had to put up there too. And I've got up a beautiful four pair section of telephone lines up to an army exchange. So that was completed. Well, in the meantime, during the early morning or late night of that day after this, along come the Germans with their bombs and blitzed all the areas of which we'd been working. And there was not a pair connected from our exchange to the army exchange. They destroyed all their good work. Well, of course, some sections were still intact, but other sections were still broken. So what we had to do was to go out and get one pair of lines through by joining one good section to a bad section, the bad section to a good section, and so on, until we got one through. Well, of course, it wasn't long after that, on the 20th of May, that the Germans came over and started their invasion. Now, General Freyberg, the New Zealand officer in charge of the island, our Major General Weston, he was in charge of the Hania area. Now, General Freyberg, we learned, was the only person on the island that knew of the code breaking business that they'd broken the German code, and he was severely warned not to give any indication in any way to enable the Germans to realize that we had broken the code. And so he acted accordingly. Well, during the before the invasion, he was in a small cave on the edge of Hania and the Akrotiri. And he stood outside the cave and he was gazing out at sea when suddenly, or at least gradually perhaps, he heard the droning of aircraft, and of course he realized that this was it. And as they came over, he looked at his watch and his remarks was, yes, bang on time, 8 o'clock on the 20th of May 1941, and that was the start of the invasion. Now, chaos, as far as we were concerned, because we had lines down everywhere. I was sent out, first of all, on the day of the invasion, just outside the government building, there was a large area between the buildings and the billet where we were billeted, and there was a bit of a garden in between with pine trees. And there were two streets, one coming up, both coming from the town centre of Hania, and the other one from another part of Hania. Both streets came up and came up to this point. So there were two sections, one Bren gun section on this street and another Bren gun on this street. both in the garden side by side, well, not side by side, but, you know, about 40 yards or something like that, 20, 30, 40 yards. And I was in charge of both guns. And there we were. That during that morning, we were on, well, tenderhooks to waiting for Germans to come up the street, thinking perhaps they might. And we were there the whole of that morning, and nothing happened. Of course, we heard a lot of gunfire, rifle fire, and goodness knows what. And then at midday, we were relieved, went and had a bit of lunch, and got back, and then I was taken off by, this was, I can't give you the exact time, but it was just after lunch, and I was directed to, get three or four men, three I think it was, I'm not sure, plus the lorry driver, to go to a section where the lines had been cut or blown down by parachutists and get them through to the exchange. So, with Harry, the driver, he was from the transport section, not a signalman, but he was attached to the signal company, and myself in charge with three men, and in the back of the truck we had all our equipment. We had, of course, the sky was buzzing then at this time with fighter aircraft when the bombers weren't around, and as soon as the bombers came back, the fighters weren't around. So they kept us on our toes the whole time. And this was the pattern which went on. But during this particular day, we came and we knew where we had to go. Well, no, first of all, Lieutenant Lloyd said to me to go and get this line repaired from somewhere between the monastery and our exchange. And I said, right, sir, where is the monastery? Oh, he said, it's over there somewhere. And we had no maps. We hadn't been there long enough to know. We hadn't been there long enough to get acquainted with the area. All he said to me was, over there somewhere. Well, a monastery to me, in those days, was a monastery, you know, with monks and all that sort of thing. But it didn't, it's a church. So I had no idea which way to go, excepting that way. So we took a line from where we were, and then we came to the open ground out of this area where we were tree-lined. And we had to go down over a steep dip into a road down below, and it was completely open with all these aircraft buzzing around, these Messerschmitts of single engine fighters. Most dangerous part that I've ever been in, I think, excepting for a few bombs. And we just had to wait until we had a period when it was a bit quiet, and I says, come on, go. And Harry just put his foot down on that truck, down this rough road. It was a bit of a hairy run, I can tell you. We had those helmets with visors. I don't know if you've ever heard of or seen one. And the jolting of that rough ride down just dropped the visors, and I just couldn't see where I was going. Not that it mattered, because I was just hanging on. Anyway, we got to the bottom safely, fortunately. And from there, we had to decide which way to go, left or right. Well, we went right. And we parked the van because it was dangerous to go too far with a van without walking forwards first to make sure that things were all right. we just went towards this junction where there was a cottage on the left, of which we were a little bit scary because we were in an area of where parachutists had dropped.